everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. And welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today for another really important conversation. This program is devoted to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed and enlightened decision about your health and well-being. And as always, it's an opportunity to just keep getting more knowledge, more education, allowing us to step into a greater level of our own inner power. So we have another important conversation. Before we go there, though, I certainly want to welcome people who may be listening for the first time. Please go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. That's a place to get a lot of great information and special reports. And also my Facebook page is another great stop to like. Go over there, like it, because I post on a daily basis additional information, and it really is an opportunity for me to just keep sharing all the wonderful bits and pieces I come across. So What Women Must Know, that's a place to go. I also want to just share with everyone, last February, I took a trip with a group of eight other people, and we went down to Peru. And the purpose of my trip to Peru was really about my own personal transformational journey. I was really wanting a quantum leap, you might say. And I decided that Peru was a land that held a profound healing and mysteries, really. So this intrepid little band went down to Peru. We spent time in the Andes, went to Machu Picchu, and then we journeyed on to the Amazon. The purpose of the trip really was to experience and open ourselves to the powerful plant medicines that have been used for hundreds, if not thousands of years in the Amazon, medicines such as ayahuasca. And ayahuasca is a really interesting plant medicine. There's so much research that is being done with these plant medicines right now, and I was actually quite impressed with one of the areas of research, which had to do demonstrating that ayahuasca actually allows the brain to rewire out of connections that keep us stuck in old traumas, so we can reconnect with new perceptions and new perspectives so we can see the world in some new ways. Ayahuasca has become a plant medicine that enables people to open to more creativity, enables people to heal emotional traumas that they've been carrying around from their past. It allows for physical healing, and it allows for an expanded level of consciousness. So I have to say that the trip was so profound. Everyone who went along had the most amazing and healing time. And as a result of the personal experiences that I had that have had a huge impact on me for the better, I have to say, I'm organizing another opportunity to experience with the shaman, the traditionally trained shaman, with the ayahuasca journey. But this time, we're going to a luxury resort in Costa Rica. So this is quite an amazing experience because incorporated in the trip, which is all-inclusive, in addition to the plant medicine journeys, we're actually going to have three colonics over the 7 days we're there, three massages, mud baths. We're having live blood cell analysis. We're going to have two aura readings. There are yoga classes, meditation classes, organic farm-to-table foods. It's quite an extraordinary experience. So I wanted to announce it to everyone today and let you know that this is happening February 13th. There's a small group I'll be taking if you are interested in this kind of transformational spiritual healing journey, then please check it out. The website that I'd like you to go to is called Rhythmia. The center is Rhythmia Life Advancement Center in Costa Rica. That's R-Y-T-H-M-I-A, rhythmia.com/Selman. The number, if you want to learn more, to the center is 844-346-8069. And if you want to talk to me about this experience and what it involves and if it's the right thing for you to do, it's like a luxury vacation that also will have profound healings. And you can always contact me at Dr. Selman at What Women Must Know, or you can even call my office line, 918-728-7069. So February 13th. Six nights, 7 days, down in Costa Rica on the Pacific side in a luxury resort that is dedicated, and by the way, it is the only medically licensed plant medicine center in the world right now. So it's an extraordinary place under the medical supervision and also incorporating many, many modalities to support our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual transformation. So sounds pretty exciting to me, and if it calls to you, get in touch, visit the rhythmia.com/Selman website, contact me directly, happy to help you understand more about what's involved and if it's right for you. So, okay, having said all that, I want to talk about the subject that we're going to be discussing today. I recently was listening to a public radio segment that was talking about the importance of the vaccine Gardasil. And as I listened to that interview, I wanted to actually scream and stomp my feet. I was so angry at the level of bias that was being presented. There's a really big story about this quote-unquote human papilloma vaccine. We're going to be exploring the truth about it, what's really going on, what you need to know, and especially if you have children or grandchildren or friends have children that are approaching the age, which actually is about 9 or 10 or 11, when this is being given to them in schools. In some places, I know in countries like Australia, it is being mandated, no way out. And we need to really understand what's going on. So the best person that I thought of to help us really get a grasp of what is happening about this Gardasil vaccine issue is my guest today, Norma Erickson. And Norma is the president of SaneVax, who was an average citizen working as an independent business consultant and freelance author before she became aware of the number of people experiencing debilitating medical conditions after the administration of Gardasil in 2010. She established SaneVax as a direct response to the worldwide devastation left in the wake of the HPV vaccination programs. The SaneVax team believes no vaccine should be approved for public use without first being scientifically proven, safe, affordable, necessary, and effective. At no time from concept through administration have HPV vaccines met any of these common sense criteria. Therefore, she and the SaneVax team have made it their mission to create a world where only scientifically proven sane vaccines and vaccination practices are allowed. So, stay tuned, people, because we have a really profound and important show. And it's my pleasure to welcome Norma Erickson to the show. Hello, Norma. Hello, Norma.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm so good, and it's such a pleasure to talk to you again. We talked, quite a few years ago when you first alerted me to this whole Gardasil issue, and we did a series of interviews that I sent out called the Gardasil Files. That must have been around, 2010, 2011. Boy, things have just gotten worse, I have to say, and on many levels. And you know, did you listen to that, you know, segment on public radio that I tried to alert you to when it was going on?
I tried to listen in, and I could not get it to connect for the life of me. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I really felt we needed to have the other voice here talking about this issue. So I'd like us to start, Norma, from the very beginning. And let's start by defining what is this Gardasil vaccine that we're talking about. What is it, and what does it supposedly do? Why is it being mandated? Why was it created? What's the problem it's attempting to address?
Okay, that could take the whole hour, but we'll try to make
well,
it real brief.
We have a whole
here.
Hour, so you're okay.
Gardasil is one of three HPV vaccines. There's Gardasil, which has four strains of HPV combated, Cervarix, which has two, and the new Gardasil 9, which has nine strains that are the proteins are included for. What it is supposed to do is prevent various types of cancer by preventing HPV infections. There is some evidence that it does prevent HPV infections for the strains that are involved with the vaccines, but there is also some evidence that those types that are vaccine relevant are already being replaced by other types.
We just need to say that HPV is for human papillomavirus, just so people need to understand if they've never heard the term HPV before.
Just briefly define that.
Yeah.
Human papillomavirus is a very common, they call it infection, but from my perspective, it's really hard to call something an infection when 90% of the viruses clear on their own without medical intervention and without any symptoms within 2 years.
Okay, so this is a common infection. I want to just say at this point that this is an infection that can show up in the cervix, can affect the cervix. And what I want to just add is that the pill, when a woman is taking the pill, she actually compromises the mucosal membrane of the vagina, and she becomes more vulnerable to exposure to human papillomavirus. So I don't know if people really understand that that is another consequence of taking the contraceptive pill and its relationship to this, to the vulnerability of getting in and exposed to human papillomavirus.
Yes, but it also needs to be stressed that being exposed to human papillomavirus is not a huge tragedy. According to the World Health Organization, of all the women around the world who are exposed to any high-risk type of HPV, now high-risk means that it has the potential, theoretically, to cause cancer. Of all the people exposed to all of the types, not just the vaccine types, only 0.15% of those individuals will ever go on to develop invasive cervical cancer. So you're talking about vaccinating an entire global population for a virus that is relatively harmless 99.85% of the time.
Which sounds so shocking to think about the fact that they are vaccinating not just little girls, and we're talking about little children because this vaccine supposedly only works when you have not had any sexual activity, been exposed to the virus. So they are vaccinating little girls, but also now there is a big push, and this was part of the public radio issue, a big push to vaccinate all our little 10-year-old, 9, 10, 11-year-old boys.
That's true. And the case for vaccinating them is even more shaky than it is for vaccinating girls.
So the rationale is that they have a vaccine that will prevent cervical cancer. Their rationale, but not proven. So can you just expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Most of the cancers that they're talking about take decades to develop. Cervical cancer in particular, pap smears have controlled them in most developed countries, controlled cervical cancer rates in most developed countries, because pap smears are designed to catch abnormal cell growth before it turns to cancer. That way it can be watched, monitored, and treated if necessary. In most developed countries, cervical cancer deaths have gone down dramatically before the introduction of HPV vaccines.
Okay, so we are pushing a universal vaccine for a condition that in most cases, if there is exposure, can heal 90% of the time on its own. Women generally can catch this if they have a pap smear. And it is not proven to be effective whatsoever to a condition that really isn't life-threatening to the majority of people.
Exactly.
Right.
And in addition to that, we've got the problem that its efficacy ratings are currently being judged on CIN 2 and 3 or greater. They're even using CIN 1. Now, those are abnormal cell growth prior to cancer. CIN 1, only 1.5% will go on to develop into CIN 2. CIN 2, same percentage. And even when you get to what would be the real cervical cancer precursor, CIN 3, only 12.5% of those abnormal cells develop into cervical cancer. So we're still dealing with endpoints that resolve on their own, and trying to say that the vaccine is effective because it's reducing those endpoints that there again would go away on their own.
Okay, so if this vaccine really isn't addressing a serious problem at all, it is not a serious health risk. It is not addressing a really serious cancer that is affecting the majority of the population. And we'll talk about some of the risks and side effects in a minute, but then why is it being mandated? And where is it being mandated in the United States?
In the United States, it's mandated in Virginia, Washington, D.C., and borderline mandated in California. It hasn't been firmly mandated yet, but California just instituted a law that denies children their public education if they are not vaccinated according to the CDC schedule.
So they look
Allegheny
at adding
County
that
County in Pennsylvania tried to mandate it, but there was enough outcry from the public that they dropped that idea just this morning.
So the question is, and I'm sure the question in everyone's mind is, why? Why are they pushing this vaccine? Why are they attempting to mandate it? Why does it even show up in schools? By the way, I know there are some schools that are offering this without the consent of parents. Is that still true?
Yes, absolutely, that's still true. Many states have laws that after a child is 12 years old, they can get anything sexually... how do I say this? They can get birth control pills without their parents' consent. They can consent to an abortion without their parents' consent. They can also consent to HPV vaccinations. Anything that reproductive health oriented in many, many states and countries, once they're 12 years old, they can do on their own.
Yeah, that's pretty scary because you were talking about 12-year-olds. 12-year-olds who, you know, have no comprehension of what they're getting involved in nor the consequences about what they are doing.
Oh, no, and in addition to that, teenagers worldwide feel like they're invulnerable. They're not going to ask about side effects or repercussions or anything like that. They're not going to be fully informed of their own medical history or their family's medical history. It's virtually impossible for them to make an informed decision.
Okay, so that's pretty scary on its own, but let's talk about what your work is about and what you're doing on sanebacks.org, because I have to say I learned so much of this through you, Norma, over the years, and what you have been doing to make people aware of how dangerous this vaccination is and how it's compromising women's health, how it has actually contributed to the death of young women, probably young boys now as well. In fact, it is contributing to the death of young boys. So let's talk more about why you are so concerned about this vaccine and what you are collecting stories of, which are readily available, by the way, on your website, sanevax.org. And I just want to emphasize to everyone listening, at least go and check out the information on sanevax.org before you or someone you know actually allows their child to be receiving this Gardasil vaccination, because you can't, let's just say it's hard to undo once it's done. So
absolutely,
get the knowledge
it's nearly
first.
Impossible to unvaccinate.
Yeah.
And let me stress that we don't tell parents what they should do. Our stance is get all the information you can and make an intelligent, well-informed decision. We collect scientific data, we collect the latest peer-reviewed published research. We operate basically as a clearinghouse for information on anything HPV-related or HPV vaccine-related. We have HPV vaccine survivor stories from around the globe. You can look at those, I mean, and know they are not proven to have been caused by HPV vaccines, but they have not been proven to not be caused by HPV vaccines either. And it's our contention that it should not be the responsibility of the families of HPV vaccine survivors to prove how their injury was caused. It should be up to the manufacturer to prove that their product is safe.
So what's been happening to the children who have, to many of the children and the stories that have been provided on your website, what happens to these kids when they receive the vaccine? What goes on, and let's just start with what are some of the injuries that have occurred after this vaccine has been administered? And we should say it's three different injections, right? You have to get three doses of this, this vaccine, and I think it also needs to be stated this is the most expensive vaccine so far that's been created.
Yes, it is the most expensive that's ever been created. The three doses honestly depend on what country you live in. Most of Europe has backed off to a two-dose regime. The European Union has. The United States is still three. Canada is debating on whether or not to go to two. But anyway, the three doses vary, but for the United States, Australia, and many other countries, it is still three. And probably one of, I just published a story about a girl today, in fact, that has been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, autoimmune disorders, hair loss, nerve damage, weakness, tremors, exercise intolerance, heat and cold intolerance, difficulty breathing, chest pain, abdominal pain, nausea and vomiting, brain fog, allodynia, which is a pain response from stimuli that does not normally cause pain, like some of the girls cannot stand to take a shower because the water hitting their skin hurts them. That's what that is, allodynia is. Nystagmus, which is rapid involuntary eye movement, and non-epileptic seizures. And this is in addition to the condition that put her in the hospital, which is hypokalemia. It's a life-threatening low potassium level.
Okay, so this is a healthy young girl. How old is she?
She's 15 now. She was 13 when she got her injections.
All right, so this is a healthy young girl who got her injection.
Brand new one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she was healthy. She was a green belt in karate. She walked about 10 miles a day, And now she's in a wheelchair.
Oh, God, that's so sad. But she's not alone. What's the incidence of young children who've had the Gardasil vaccine being injured?
Oh, you know, that's really frustrating for me when people ask that question, because there's no way for us to tell the incidence, because the pharmaceutical industry only advertises distributed doses, not administered doses. So we don't know how many are in storage. We don't know how many have doses have expired. We don't know how many have actually been administered in any given country. However, Merck just did recently a clinical trial for Gardasil 9, and they used Gardasil as the placebo. In that clinical trial, 2.5% of the people that received Gardasil had serious adverse reactions. Now, for your listeners, serious means life-threatening, requires hospitalization or surgery to repair the damage, death, or birth defects. It's, when they say serious, they mean way serious. And that's 2.5% for Gardasil. If you compute that out to the distributed doses, if all of those doses that have been distributed are administered, we're going to be looking at millions of girls worldwide with serious repercussions.
So Norma, my question to you is, what is going on? Why are these children, so many of them, and again, if people go to stvax.org, they see all the stories and they're heartbreaking. Why is this vaccine so harmful to so many children?
Ooh, there are several theories. They have not been proven yet, but one of them is because of the contaminant that Dr. Sinhang Lee found in Gardasil, the HPV-L1 protein being firmly attached to the aluminum adjuvant in a non-B conformation is a problem in and of itself, because it's bound by what they call ligand exchange. It's, aluminum is used as an adjuvant to carry the antigen throughout the body so that you're immune system theoretically creates antibodies that will fight off future infections. Being bound by ligand exchange does not allow the protein L1, the particle, the antigen, to disengage from the aluminum once it's traveled a certain distance. And the non-B conformation that was discovered has already been studied since the 1960s and is associated with 50 autoimmune disorders and 20 psychiatric disorders. So that's one potential problem. The other potential problem is some researchers have, Ken Duke and her team, have studied the HPV-16 proteins that were used to manufacture the virus-like proteins that are the antigen. And they have found that there are many, many similarities between that HPV-16 protein and multiple proteins that the human body produces to maintain normal function. So anything that attacks that HPV-16L1 protein could theoretically attack any one of the other 80 proteins produced by your body if it recognizes that as a threat also. So there's that. There is also the very high amount of aluminum in the vaccines, and we all know that aluminum is a toxin and it stays in the body for much, much longer when it's injected than when you ingest it, eat it. So that could be another problem for the people that are borderline overexposed. Somebody walks in and they haven't been exposed to enough aluminum to make it a physical problem for them. and they receive 3 injections with aluminum in a short period of time, it can push them over the edge of the toxic burden.
Right. Okay.
There is also the fact that there is polysorbate 80 in Gardasil Gardasil, and that has been proven to interfere with reproductive functions. And there's more. Should we go on? Do we need to? Is that not enough?
I think that's enough. And, you know, we need to take a break right here, Norma. But when we come back, let's talk more about some of the serious consequences from taking this Gardasil vaccine. What's happening to our children? Why are they giving it to boys? And what does that mean for men or young boys? What's that whole story? Let's explore all of that in more detail when we come back. But for everyone listening, you can see why I think this is a really important conversation we're having. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you're listening to What Women Must Know. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Thanks for joining me. We are talking to Norma Erickson today. She is president of SaneVax, of SaneVax.org. And we're exploring what you need to know about the Gardasil vaccine. This is the vaccine that they are health authorities, in some cases governments are mandating, states are mandating for young girls and young boys to address supposedly the human papillomavirus. So an important conversation if you have young children. Norma, we're talking about the known dangers from that vaccine, the ingredients, the adjuvants that have been put into the Gardasil vaccine that have really contributed to some of the reactions that children are having. I wanted to ask you, let's talk about, well, I think I just want to stay with little girls right now. You have numerous stories, and I have to say I've talked to some of these parents, and their children were healthy when they went into this whole experience before they've had their injections, and then after their injections, their lives totally changed. And some children have actually died, haven't they, as a result?
Yes, they have. In fact, currently, VAERS reports indicate that 261 deaths have occurred after HPV vaccinations in the United States. And I just got a report from a Spanish attorney in the European Union that there are an additional 352 deaths reported after HPV vaccines in Europe. And you have to say HPV vaccines there because they do use both Gardasil and Cervarix. Recently, Denmark has reported 2 fatalities.
I mean, there must be more in Australia as well.
I'm sure there is. I don't have a figure for Australia because their system is rather confusing. And it's very difficult for civilians to access.
Yeah. You know, I remember talking to one father of a young girl who received the vaccine, and she almost died. She had major chronic inflammation in her brain, and she almost died, and she has been severely debilitated ever since, and, you know, all the consequences of brain damage, and it was just such a sad story, this young, vibrant, as all these young girls are. You know, they're so healthy and vibrant, and then they take the vaccine and their lives change. They just create all this chronic inflammatory reactions going on, autoimmune conditions. And like you were saying with that young girl that you just wrote about, it just takes many, many forms, variations on a theme throughout the body, being compromised.
It does. It's amazing what sort of devastation has been happening after HPV vaccines. In fact, in Colombia, the parents of 829 severely affected girls spent the last 4 days padlocking the doors of schools in protest of their lack of response to their girls' health problems from their health department. And they were successful in the fact that they today got a face-to-face meeting with the national health minister. And what will come of that, we don't know. But they had to resort to blockading the schools and not allowing schools to operate for 4 days in order to get some sort of attention for the girls. I mean, Ireland's having the same problem. They're not blockading the schools, of course, but they're definitely protesting the fact that their daughters are injured, something is wrong, they need treatment, and they've basically been injected and neglected by their healthcare system.
Wow. So it started out that this was a vaccine that was designed for young girls and supposedly to prevent them from developing cervical cancer. And we have to say it's been called a cervical cancer vaccine. It's not true at all. It's addressing, I believe, two strains of human papillomavirus, which may or may not ever eventuate into cervical cancer, which we already discussed has a very low incidence anyway in this country.
Yes.
But now it's broadened its scope, and it is being recommended in this, NPR show was definitely touting this for young boys now. So what's happening now? Why young boys are being recommended for this, and what's the consequence to them?
We're finding that the consequences for the boys are just as severe as for the girls. Autoimmune disorders, temporary paralysis. I personally know of two that have died. I know that there's more than that in the VAERS reports, but I know these two. Another thing that's happened with boys is I personally spoke to a 17-year-old in California who had two injections and is now impotent. And he said a friend of his has the same problem, but won't talk about it. And, you know, you can understand at 17 years old how difficult it would be for a boy to discuss that with anyone.
Right. So why are they pushing this on young boys?
Well, my firm belief is it's strictly money. You look at all of the advertisements, all of the articles in traditional press are basically advertisements, and they, bar none, go for increased uptake of the vaccine, almost totally ignoring the side effects or trying to claim that they're minimal, on and on, but it's uptake. And if you think about it, in a country where there's 6 million children born every year, multiply 6 million by the $450 it takes for those three injections, and you have one whale of a pile of money.
So is human papillomavirus, which they're now attributing to throat cancers, right, that they're associating this increased incidence of throat cancers related to the human papillomavirus?
They are claiming that in throat cancers, it's only been HPV virus has only been discovered in about 60% of the throat cancers. So their rationale is even more tenuous than it is for cervical cancer, where it's been found in over 95% of cervical cancer cells. And that's another whole issue. They have never, ever proven that HPV virus by itself causes any sort of cancer. It has to be accompanied by one or more of the other risk factors for whichever type of cancer you're talking about. And the ones that primarily hit the boys are virtually non-existent in the heterosexual population. Those cancers primarily hit men who have sex with men. So vaccine does work, it would only make sense to target that population versus the whole population. And they argue the way out of that by claiming herd immunity. They're thinking that if they can keep HPV away from the boys, then the girls won't get it, and all of a sudden we will have a world free of cervical cancer and throat cancer and anal cancer and all of that. Unfortunately, in the real world conditions, that's not looking like it's happening. In fact, there's already 107 cases of cervical cancer diagnosed after HPV vaccines in the VAERS database, and that's just in the United States. When we had the HPV International Conference in Chicago, there was a young woman who spoke who had one injection of Gardasil, and over the next year and a half, she had cervical cancer four times.
Well, so do they think that the vaccine can actually cause cervical cancer? Is that what they're surmising?
It's entirely possible. Once again, no proof. And the problem is anyone who tries to study whether or not there may be a causal link gets crucified by the medical establishment.
Right, because we know that there's a powerful lobby that is there promoting vaccines and wants us to believe that they are absolutely essential and our saviors. So anyone challenging that is challenging a huge, powerful corporate entity. So if we're really giving the message to parents, which is really what I wanted our conversation to do, it's making parents aware that the push in schools, and actually doctors as well, it's being administered in schools, and also pediatricians are doing this as well in their offices, right?
Yes, although in the United States there's about 30% of the pediatricians that will not recommend it. Which is good.
How interesting. Yeah, how interesting, because they're concerned about the consequences.
I can't vouch for them, but I know that's the case because they're being targeted for not doing their job and that type of thing, and the CDC blames the low uptake on pediatricians that don't recommend it because they're not aware of the dangers of cervical cancer and all of that. So, yeah, you have to kind of read between the lines.
Yeah, when I've investigated this whole issue on Gardasil, it just seemed that as you were saying, the science is really shaky about the safety of this vaccine and the efficacy of this vaccine. We definitely have a growing evidence of all these vaccine-injured children and devastating consequences, including deaths, to a condition that rarely will ever occur and is not a real public health threat or disaster in any way, shape, or form. And it's debatable if this vaccine will even last until these children are old enough to be vulnerable to cervical cancer, which is decades down the track. We didn't talk about that, did we? How effective is this vaccine when it's administered to a 12-year-old when a cervical vaccine shows up later decades in life?
That's a really good question. The answer will probably be from the establishment that it's booster shots are required. Your immunity is waning, booster shots, and then they get another round of very profitable injections.
So what are you saying to parents? What is your guidance when parents ask you about this?
Okay, my guidance is do your research. Check out both sides of the story, not just St. Bax's side, but the opposition side. Read some of these stories. Look at your family history. Look at your child's medical history, and if you consider HPV vaccinations are maybe a good thing to add to your cancer prevention strategies, go in armed with facts. Know that in your mind and for your family, it's the right thing before you decide.
Wow. Do you think it's the right thing?
Do I think it's the right thing? No.
Yes.
I think the risk of cervical cancer is minimal. This is not an airborne disease, so it's not a public health threat. Other risk factors have to be present. Pap smears are still required. So you're not saving anything by adding an injection when pap smears have already taken care of it. So my thoughts would be, okay, if there aren't tests available for the other types of cancer, develop those tests instead of investing all these huge, huge dollar amounts into a vaccine that is not proven effective, that is proving itself to be very, very unsafe, and will probably wear off before you risk getting exposed to HPV. I mean, it makes no sense in my personal book.
Norma, I just want to mention those stats. We talked about them earlier, but if parents are still deliberating because there's some real scare tactics. I know when I listened to that the public radio interview and all these doctors when you listen to them without the other side being presented, there was no one speaking about any concerns and risks associated, and no one really called in who had any children who were injured except one person who did, and his son got type 1 diabetes after he had the injection, and the doctors just totally dismissed it as coincidental. No correlation whatsoever. So the statistic around cervical cancer, can we just repeat that? What is the risk of what are the statistics about cervical cancer and the risk of actually developing cervical cancer in the United States or in Western countries?
In the United States, you're much more likely to get hit by lightning than you are to develop cervical cancer if you go for your regular checkups. Okay, cervical cancer in the United States for the last 20 years has been primarily diagnosed in women that either have never had a pap smear or have not had one for at least 5 years. Okay, that's for the United States. For the entire world, and this is even places that don't have access to pap smears, according to the World Health Organization, only 0.15% of all of the women exposed to all of the 30 or 40 types of high-risk HPV strains that are out there, only 0.15% will ever go on to develop cervical cancer.
Wow. That's like 0.15%. That's,
yes.
You know, such
in other words, 99.85% of the time.
Right.
It does not develop into cervical cancer.
Wow. So we're being the propaganda is pushing us through fear tactics to take this, the most expensive vaccine that's ever been created, in three different times of injection, with all these adjuvants like you were saying, aluminum, and which can cause neurological damage, and polysorbate 80, which, and also the other more technical things you were talking about that can increase the incidence of autoimmune disease within the body, for a condition that 99.85% of the time will never, ever eventuate into cervical cancer.
True.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, there's a term that we use in Australia that says, you know, that's just making us gobsmacked. That's a gobsmacking statistic,
it's
right?
It's really hard to digest, isn't it, that there is so much fear surrounding something that is such a small threat.
So we have to follow the money, because being the most expensive vaccine that has ever been created, it's, you know, generating billions and billions and billions of dollars at you know, at the risk of our children's health. We're really sacrificing our children's health. And I think it's so blatant that this is just another scheme to generate huge income for the pharmaceutical industries, putting our children at risk for a condition that they will probably never, ever have anyway. And like you said, if young women had regular pap smears, even before that, what you were saying, if a child is healthy, you can clear a viral infection like human papillomavirus within 2 years naturally. Your own immune system takes care of it. If you do get regular pap smears, if you do have multiple sex partners, then it will show up at the pap smear, and then there are ways to do that. And I generally find what also helps with alleviating cervical dysplasia, which is often caused by human papillomavirus, is just get more folic acid, B6 into your bodies, you know, more minerals, and you can support the immune system to address this problem. We don't need a very dangerous vaccine, and if people are uncertain about the risks involved, then I really encourage people to go to your website, sanevax.org, and read the stories, the personal stories of the children who have innocently taken this vaccine, and their lives have been changed and transformed and altered and damaged forever.
Well, hoping not forever. We're hoping that there are doctors that are working on treatment protocols, and some of them are being quite successful, not with all of the survivors, but with a good percentage. So there is hope for recovery.
But, you know, there is hope, but do you find that these children are getting help within the traditional medical model, or do they have to go elsewhere in more alternative, complementary, modalities to really achieve success and healing?
Most of them, the vast majority, have to go through alternative treatment modalities, but there are also several very traditional doctors who are working on treatment protocols and taking advice from some of the other alternative practices and running tests and running experiments and really trying to help the girls. But, you know, the other side of that coin is I just read an article written by a doctor in Denmark whose theory was that the vast majority of these survivors are suffering from functional disorders, which means it's psychosomatic, and that the medical community should give them a placebo and let them on their way.
Really? Wow.
Really?
Yeah, how many of us really want to buy that one?
Yeah.
You know, we're not stupid. You know, how can they even consider making such a comment and a statement, you know?
Especially in countries where they haven't even met these people face-to-face. They have no idea what they're going through. They are just, you know, like Ireland, for instance, can't get their health minister to meet with any of the families in person. And they've been fighting for 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you possibly sit back in your ivory tower and claim everything as psychosomatic when you haven't even looked at one of the patients?
You know, Ireland has the largest pharmaceutical industries throughout Europe that I'm aware of. I was amazed how many of the pharmaceutical industries are headquartered in Ireland. So, hello. You know, the influence is great.
You know, when people are suffering, the very least the health department could do is examine things.
So, Norma, one last question real quick before we come to the end. Have any of these children gone to the vaccination, what do they call it, the vaccination review board, and have gotten compensation for damages?
There have been several claims that have been awarded for HPV vaccine injuries in the United States, always, of course, with the disclaimer that when we pay this compensation, it is no admission that the vaccine caused the problem.
But
by virtue of the fact that there is no table of injuries for the HPV vaccine in the United States, what that means is those parents who awarded compensation had to have had expert testimony with them indicating that it was the probable cause in order to get that compensation. So being compensated for an HPV vaccine in the United States, whether they admit that it's an admission or not, does say something.
Right. Well, Norma Erickson, thank you so much for your dedicated work to getting this message out. Your website is such a wealth of information, of resources. I encourage everyone to go visit SaneVax.org, and learn more about the research, the stories, what's going on around the world in regards to the Gardasil vaccine, which is the vaccine that is being dispensed throughout the world to all children, starting at, 9 years of age in some places?
9 years of age, and they are currently running clinical trials in children over the age of one.
Oh, gosh. So this is so important. This is, like, terrifying information. We need to get it out there. Thank you so much for your tireless efforts in trying to educate us and alert us. Norma, I really appreciate all the work you've been doing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for giving a platform for the voice to be heard.
You're very welcome. And we've been talking with Norma Erickson, president of SaneVax. So thanks again, Norma, for all of you listening. Visit SaneVax.org. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. Always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Thanks for now.
Yes, indeed.
Bye.